Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part one of episode number 90 of my 60 music podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. First of all, I'd to welcome all you to part one of episode number 90 of my 60 music podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or in iHeartRadio, or on Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is, I'm just going to give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I am a 24-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a huge 60 music fan slash expert slash nerd. And each week with this podcast, I take one song by one artist from the 60s, split the show in two parts. First part, I start to talk about my opinion of the song and why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, and do my own personalities on the range of the song, will still include the chords, melody, and lyrics. And the second part of the show, I dig deep into the history behind that track. In that part of the show, I talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, who was the artist who recorded the song, and the history behind them, and the history behind the songwriters that wrote the song, and the producer that produced it, and the musicians that played on the song, whether that be the session musicians or the band members themselves, where the studio the song was recorded at, where that studio was located at, and the label the song was released on, where that label was located at, and the peak position the song made up originally on the Billboard Hot 100 charts when it first came out in the year month it was released. All that is in the second part of the show. Moving on, let's get started in this week's song, shall we? Okay, so to switch things up this week for my podcast, I'm going to be doing something the polar opposite from what I did last week, and I'm going to just say something to you right now about this song. I can't guarantee you that you'll like it and you'll be in love with it personally, because this might be the first song I'm doing on my podcast, you know, and that you might not like. I mean, you might listen to the song after I'm done reviewing it and explaining to you what I think about it, and you might think it's trash, and you never want to listen to this song again. This genre of music is definitely not for everybody, and if that's your stance on it, that's perfectly fine with me. I mean, you know, I'm really trying to turn people on to people my age about this music, but you know, it's okay if there's maybe a couple, two or three songs that you're just not really a fan of. And if you don't like the song, I totally get it, because there are a lot of songs in this very super specific genre of music from the 60s that I don't like at all. And whenever my local satellite oldies radio station plays them, I'm just like, oh my God, I just don't want to listen to it. You know, and I trust me, if you don't like this tune, I don't blame you for disliking it, you know, because, you know, this is not one of those songs that I can listen to over and over and over again and still love it just as much as the first time I heard it. I mean, you might listen to the song, you might think it's really annoying, but the whole purpose behind me talking about the song this week for my podcast is because lyrically, the song talks about a situation that would be a precursor to something that would cause worldwide attention to both guys and girls. But at the time that the song was written, the situation that is described within the lyrics of the song were simply swept under the rug and not dealt with by the authorities. And let me put it to you this way. Guys were basically getting away with the situation that's happening lyrically in the song and not getting their just desserts for how they were treating women back then. And it wasn't until years and years later, actually like pretty recently, like 3 years ago, back in 2017, that guys were acting like the guy in the song were finally getting their asses kicked by society by being morally corrupt and just not, you know, handling things politely and appropriately. But this song was written and recorded 50 years before that even happened. In fact, this song came out in July of 1968. It's by a band called 1910 Fruit Gum Company. It's called 1-2-3 Red Light. Time I tried to prove my love. How's that for a really weird song from the 60s? I mean, to say that it was an awesome song, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's that awesome, but it is an interesting tune. And, you know, it's worth, you know, diving into and talking about, you know, especially with what's happened recently over the last 3 years. But before we get into that, we got to talk about what makes the song so interesting, both musically and lyrically. But first, we got to talk about the music first. Okay, so as far as the song's chord progression is concerned, it's honestly not too crazy. The nucleus of the song's chord changes is your basic 2-5-1. I mean, it's nothing too mind-blowing or revolutionary, but to spice things up, it does do a key change going up a half step from D major to E flat major. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're around my age and you're like a millennial and you're like, what? A key change? That's weird. I'm not used to hearing that. I've never really heard too much of that before in pop music. Well, keep in mind that unlike today, 50 plus years ago, key changes were incredibly common in pop music. And though not every pop song you heard on the radio had a key change, a lot of them did. Whereas 90% of today's top 40 hits have no key changes. I mean, key changes are kind of a rare breed in today's pop music. But back then, key changes are pretty much normal to most pop songwriters. And the song was no exception to that. I mean, do a half-step key change, whatever, that's cool. I mean, it didn't sound too cheesy or too weird, you know. But I really want key changes to make a comeback, though, because I feel like, you know, they're kind of a lost art. And I feel like if more people did them today, it would sound cool and interesting again. But, and this song, you know, aside from your basic 2-5-1 chord progression, you know, which is happening in the choruses, there are a couple of other interesting harmonic things that happen in the song. Like, for example, in the song's quote-unquote bridge, before we get to the song's key change, there is a chord progression where it sounds like your basic 1-4, but the chord they're using as the 4 chord has some extra notes in there, so it wouldn't necessarily be a straight 4 chord. It would actually be like a minor 11 chord or 9 sus 4 chord, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's basically E minor 7 with an A and a bass. So, it's definitely kind of a hybrid chord. You know, it's definitely my favorite chord. And, you know, and this chord gives the song a lot of harmonic beef when it's, for the most part, pretty basic. I mean, this is just a basic song and nothing too crazy about it harmonically. And one other thing I wanted to mention before I move on to the song's instrumentation is that, you know, key changes in recent years, you know, haven't been too common. But in the 90s, if you grew up listening to 90s pop like NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears, they were incredibly common. I mean, you heard key changes in pop songs all the time in the 90s. So they kind of made a comeback, you know, about 30 years ago. So they could make another comeback. So we'll see about that, you know. And also, on another note, with the song's instrumentation, there is an instrument in this tune that if you're somebody that's around my age, you may not have heard this instrument before because it's rarely heard in pop songs today. And that is the compact organ that's either a Vox Continental or a Farfisa compact. It's kind of hard to tell exactly which one it is. I don't really know personally. And if you're wondering what the heck those instruments are, well, they were essentially the original synthesizers before the original analog synths came to be. You see, before we had like the Korgs and some of the Yamahas and some of the fancy schmancy synthesizers we had today, you know, even before we had the compact organs, for the most part, keyboard players back in the 60s, I mean, your only options for electric keyboards were these huge, bulky Hammond B3 organs that were difficult to transport, especially if you were on the road all the time, you know. And there were some electric pianos here and there, but not everybody was using them. I mean, your standard, you know, options for keyboards back then were either the actual old school, like, baby grand or small or like grand piano, you know, which was huge and totally difficult to lug around, you know, very non-portable, or the Hammond B3 organs, which were the comparative to that, except they were even huger and very difficult to lug around. But so when the European companies saw that issue, you know, for guys that were constantly on the road, like all the time, and having to carry these huge keyboards, they thought, you know what, let's see if we can, you know, try to duplicate some of that technology or use some, you know, technology that we have to create keyboards that were a lot smaller and a lot more compact. And, you know, these instruments, such as the Voxcon and the Farfisa Compact, they're definitely smaller than the B3s. In fact, when you look at a Voxcon and a Farfisa Compact, they look like your average modern day, you know, electronic keyboard. I mean, they don't look that much different than what you see in today's world. But, you know, it's interesting because, you know, this was sort of a new thing, because now keyboard players can basically, they can basically go around and, you know, have these keyboards inside their cars, you know, and they didn't have to, like, you know, and they were so compact and so easy and so portable. But, you know, interestingly enough, you know, these Voxcon Annals and these Farfisa Compacts, they sounded quite different than the B3s and contained sounds that you would see in most electric keyboards of today, except the sounds you got off of Vox or a Farfisa weren't as nearly as good as the sounds you can get from a modern-day electric keyboard. I mean, like Yamaha or Chord, but you can literally, it was really cool because, you know, on a Voxcon Annal, you can get a sound of a string. You know, you can get horn sounds on there. And this is before, like, modern-day technology. So they were sampling stuff using tape back then. But, you know, this was definitely, you know, before, you know, we had MIDI and stuff like that. So this is pretty ahead of its time. But they were definitely a precursor to the kind of things you would see today. But nowadays, most modern pop songs use modern synth sounds. But the Vox and the Farfisa organs, you know, gave the records of the 60s their very unique charm, because you can spot the sound of a Voxcon and a Farfisa Compact a mile away. You know, they had a very distinct sound, and the reason why, you know, they're so closely attached to music of the 60s, because nobody really used them once the 60s evolved into the 70s. You know, I mean, they, you know, after that, other instruments, other keyboards started to become more popular, like the Moog synthesizer and, you know, also like the Dirty Clavinet. I mean, those instruments really took off in the 70s, you know, but before any of that, you know, the definitive sounds of electric keyboards, aside from your basic Hammond B3, were the Voxcon Annal and the Farfisa Compact. But most of the modern synths we have today probably wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the Voxes and the Farfisas, because they, you know, utilized similar technology, you know, years and years before, you know, it became like standard and became quote unquote normal. And the very distinctive sounding Farfisa organ on this song can be heard loud and clear in the song. Although it might be a B3, it's kind of hard to tell because, you know, the way they mixed organs back then, sometimes, it, you know, when it's by itself, it's recognizable. When it's with a bunch of instruments, it's kind of hard to tell exactly which one it is. But other really cool things that are happening as far as the song arrangement is concerned are the backing vocals in the song that are definitely very complex but unique sounding. And hand claps also sound very cool, but not unique to most 60s records. I mean, hand claps were definitely on a lot of songs back then. I mean, Four Seasons songs, you know, Motown, I mean, they were just, you know, definitely a thing, you know, when it came to a lot of different, you know, records in the 60s, especially in the pop and R&B world. But definitely something you don't hear too much of today unless you're listening to somebody like Billie Eilish. I mean, you know, hand claps, I mean, you know, but here's the thing is that, back then, you know, you couldn't, you know, there was no such thing as digital hand claps. So, you know, when they were doing hand claps back then, they're actually using like real hands and not like an electronic, you know, sample thing. So, I mean, you know, that's the distinction between hand claps of back then, hand claps of today, hand claps that were totally 100% real, versus today where it's obvious, you can tell it's a keyboard, it's a sample. But honestly, the backup harmonies on the song could be another reason as to why you can't stand this tune. You know, it isn't your favorite, and you know, if you've never heard this tune before, I mean, you might think they're really annoying, and I trust me, like I said before, I don't blame you if you do, but I will say the lead singer's voice on the song is very distinct. It's very unique sounding, and, you know, here's the thing. So, you know, what's so cool about the lead singer's voice in the song is that it sounds very much like the lead singer of what would become a huge band in the 70s, a band known as Styx. But when the song was on the charts and was popular, Styx wasn't even a working commercially successful band yet. So this group is very much a prediction of what was to come in the next decade for when it comes to popular music. Because, heck yeah, this guy sounds like a lead singer of this band that a lot of people would hear about in the next decade. But at this time, they weren't even like a thing yet. So that's really cool. Okay, so now that we're kind of done talking about the music for the song, because I feel like we've covered most of the song's musical bases. I mean, you know, it's a pretty short song, so there's not a whole lot of sections to it. You know, but moving on, let's talk about the song's lyrics, because again, this is one of those songs that I'm sure if you're a guy listening to the song, you'll be able to relate to it, but it's also a learning lesson on what not to do if you are in the same situation that the guy is in with the girl in this song. And the song really just shows you how different attitudes are back then for when it comes to the subject matter, you know, that was tackled in the song versus how we, you know, think about things today. But to look deep inside what the song is about lyrically, first, let me ask you something. If you're a guy listening to this podcast and you've ever been on a date with a girl and you try to make a move on her and she doesn't let you, now, of course, any guy would feel very frustrated and heartbroken if this were to happen to him. And so would I, personally. And I know it's super awkward and just not fun, really. You know, and I get it. I mean, understandably so. I know that in that situation, I get that it wouldn't necessarily be that great. But basically, if you ever been through that, then this song is for you, because this song paints that exact same scenario. But, and this is a very strong but, the way he perceives her giving him the signs that she does not want him to touch her is totally 100% wrong and not a good mentality for guys to have today, especially in today's climate. And essentially, the way the guy in the song is interpreting the girl telling him no is that he is thinking the girl is just teasing him and really isn't being serious. You know, with her saying no, you know, I mean, he just thinks, oh, well, you know, you're just teasing me. You're just joking. You're not being serious. Come on, stop playing games with me. And again, this was before the whole Me Too movement happened, before the whole no means no concept was really instated into guys' minds and society's minds too. But really, in the song, the guy is basically trying to convince the girl that what she is doing is wrong and she should stop playing games with him and she should simply give in to him. Guys, let me tell you something. This is not a good road to go down if you're in the same situation today with another girl. This is not a good way of thinking about things. And if a girl is telling you no when you try to sexually escalate with her, you got to put your ego aside and just take a step back and respect her wishes and not try to pursue any further than that. Totally don't. In other words, don't be like the guy in this song at all. You know, I mean, because this song was written and recorded at a time before, you know, we had such huge changes in our society, you know, before the tides kind of turned and guys like the guy in the song were just getting their, you know, totally just not, you know, being this kind of behavior was considered like unacceptable. But Because here's the thing, is that if you act like the guy in the song today, you'll get in lots and lots of trouble with a girl. But the song is a reminder of how guys perceive things about girls back in the 60s and how they thought that a girl was just teasing and just joking around when she would say no to him or in those specific scenarios. But we all know that we should not have this perspective of women today, and this is not the right way to think about certain situations like this. But if you're a guy and you've been in this situation yourself, I'm sure in some ways you'll be able to relate to this guy. And, you know, he has a right to feel frustrated and, you know, and upset, you know, but the way he's, you know, perceiving it is just not, definitely not good at all. Definitely not very, good. So, you know, don't be like the guy in the song. Let me just put it to you like that. But, you know, the interesting thing about the song is that despite whether you like it or not, the song's somewhat racy content in the lyrics is another thing that makes the song super interesting. And because here's the thing is that, you know, for even though the subject matter for the song is super like adult, you know, this genre of music that the song falls into, the guys who are writing and producing these songs, these songs were geared towards preteens. Yeah, I'm going to let that sink in for a minute. The song was originally intended for preteens to listen to, you know, and I'm going to let you think about that for a minute. And on that note, I'm going to end this week's episode. And next week, I'm going to talk a little bit more, actually a lot more, about the history behind this very specific genre of music and the band that recorded it as well. So that concludes part one of episode number 90 of my 60 Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you liked my analysis in this week's song and you thought it was interesting, even though it wasn't like your favorite song that I've talked about on my podcast, and if you just liked, you know, my take on like my breakdown on the song's lyrics and music, you can email me at samltwilliaicloud.com. And you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies and check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. As always, the things you can check out in the description of this episode of this podcast that are really, really cool, that are nice little additions to, my show, aside from the podcast itself, are one, the links to my Spotify and YouTube playlist for my podcast. There you'll be able to find all the songs I've talked about on my show so far, including some of the songs I've done in interview episodes. Every 2 weeks I do a completely different song and artist. So, you know, it's always something different, you know. So, you know, but the reason why I post those up is so that way you can kind of get a good idea for the kind of music I talk about on my show. Maybe that'll give you some ideas for the kind of music I should cover next on my podcast that I haven't talked about yet. And if that does, you can email me those ideas at samltwilliaicloud.com. And you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies as well if you're not really in email. Also, another thing that's in the description of this episode of this podcast is a link to this week's songs. That way you can listen to the whole thing. And also, you can check out the official Redbubble merchandise store for this podcast. There, I have the super cool logo that I personally designed, you know, myself, and it's really, really awesome. You know, there you'll be able to basically, you know, actually, I didn't design it, but I came up with the idea of the logo, and I had someone else design it, but it's basically the catchphrase I say at the end of every episode and keep on trucking tie-dye font and name my podcast is on the bottom, you know. And I love it if you can go on there and check out some of the items in the store. And if there's anything on there you think is cool and you want to buy it, by all means, please do. But if you're kind of tight on money, you don't really want to buy something, you just want to give me some feedback on the prices of each item in the store plus the logo itself, you can email those feedback to me at samltwilliaicloud.com, or you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies. Coming up, I'm going to a couple specific you know, 60 music related events. I'm going to the Wild Honey show, you know, at the end of this month, you know. So after that, I'll let you guys know if I wind up meeting one of the original members of Living Spoonful enough, well, I'll get to interview them on my podcast. And I'm also going to go see the original lead singer for the Guess Who, you know, and I've covered both the Guess Who and the Living Spoonful on my podcast, you know, so I'm, you know, if I get to meet one of those people, I'll definitely let you know. And if I'm able to, you know, secure an interview with either one of them on my podcast, I'll definitely let you guys know, because that's going to be really, really cool if I do that, you know. But yeah, so I'm definitely working on the interview episode for episode 100. I'm almost there, but I'll let you guys know when I have secured that. But anyway, so I'm Sam Williams, and thank you for joining me for this week's episode of my podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please keep things groovy.